Can you, from your, can you remember the social life from colonial period?
No, not really. No. Well, it depends what you mean. I mean, after the war.
Do you remember your parents going to parties?
Well, we had. There was a place called the 200 Club or something, which was in the what we called the Assembly Rooms, which was where the Queen Hotel is now. And they started this this dance club, really, and I think they met once a week. They went to, my parents belonged to that. I mean, what I remember, I mean, what I, the place that we all went to was the yacht club, really. We were all, I'd been made a member of the yacht club when, from So High, and my sister too, and we were all members of the yacht club, because the yacht club was the place that you went to, and you didn't have to sail, you know, if you didn't want to, you know. I mean, I liked motor racing and go-karts and things, and I had a great friend, Charles Piccone, who killed himself motor racing later on when he was retired. And his father, Willie Piccone, was the sailor. He was an international sailor, standard sailor, you know. And I think he designed the little boat called the Sharpie. And he tried sailing. I tried with him, actually, and we came to grief in the middle of the bay with winds hitting us from both sides. That was the end of our sailing. But we went there in the evening. After the office, you'd go there, you'd have a drink, you'd swim, you'd chat with people, and then they always had good parties. They had good dancers during the year, and then for New Year's Eve, they always had a very good sit-down party where you stayed there the whole night, and we used to go there because the 1st of January was a day, a holy day of obligation. We used to go, the priest didn't like it. We used to go to Mass at 8, after having had breakfast in the yacht club, at 8 a.m., you know, still dressed in our dinner jackets and all the rest of it. We did that for years and years. And then the sporting life, you know, we played tennis, played squash, swam. I used to run.
But your father must have been required to go to a lot of functions at the convent.
Yes, obviously he did while he was still employed. But the thing is that he retired at 50 because he could as a Foreign Office work. So that was, you see, he was born in 1896. So the time he was 50, that was when I was sort of very young myself. He married at 33. So I don't remember any of that. You know, I don't remember any of that at all.
So what did he do? He was quite, you know, obviously young.
Yeah, well, he with a few other people, has started a scrap metal business and an insurance company, Hen Nort Insurance, because he had met, I don't know if it was before the war or during the war, he had met this guy called Savile Hudson, who eventually became the sort of, chairman of the stock exchange or something. But he told me that he started there, he put out this insurance thing where for something like 10 shillings, you could insure all your belongings from bombings and all the rest of it. And of course, because it was so cheap, everyone bought it, and he made a lot of money. And so with him, he started this insurance company, which was then run from the offices of Willie Thompson by the guy called Victor Dumas, who you know probably, Victor Dumas, who is a very distinguished man now, and who was one of the employees there, and another young guy called Francis, who was a sort of chief clerk there. And he did that, and he didn't make any money, actually. He didn't make any money. He just sort of, if he made any money, it was very, very little. But it kept him busy.
And where was the family house? Where did you live in Gibraltar?
Well, we lived because we didn't own a house. Because unfortunately what happened was that though we owned lots of houses, my mother did, through the estate of her father, they were all occupied and you couldn't, you couldn't throw people out. So when my, do you know Mariola Russo? You know, the Roosters. Which Roosters do you know?
I don't know. I don't know if I know any Roosters. Mm. Well, Rissos I do.
Rissos, no. Rissos, well, Rissos is an important Rissos. Family.
Mm.
And Adolfo Russo was one of the sons who, these were the people who did the tobacco thing. And he married my cousin Mariola, the most beautiful woman in Gibraltar. She's now 87 and she's just as beautiful now, I may say. She's a wonderful, beautiful person, and very nice too. And they married in 1948 or something. And he bought this plot of land in Cumberland Road, and he built a house there, and just very convenient for my parents because they then rented the top flat. And so we lived in 27 Cumberland Road, and until my mother died, in fact. We then left it because my sister actually did manage to get a house belonging to the estate, which is above 41 Main Street, above Louis Tagnetti Limited, because my uncle lived there. So before anyone could say anything, once she was out, she went in to make sure that she got it, because she hadn't been able to marry because she didn't have a house. So it was only then that she married, in fact.
So how old were you when your mother died?
Oh, when my mother died? My mother only died about 14 years ago.
Oh, right, okay. So this was much, much later.
Much later, yes. Because my father died. My father was 12 years older than my mother.
Mm.
And he died in about 1974.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother died in 93. I think, at the age of 87. My mother was a very healthy woman because she never drank, she never smoked. She was very active. She was up very early in the morning doing her shopping. She was a very active person, except that, unfortunately, she got a stroke 12 years before she died, and that confined her to the house. She didn't want to go out, actually. We took her out once. She wasn't really interested. We had this house where you looked out of the window and you could see all the harbour, all of Spain, all around the thing. So you could sit there and have a wonderful view. And
Before the building.
Before they built in front of it, yes, before they built in front of it. So she had a wonderful, and she was quite happy there. My sister had to engage people to look after her. But she didn't need nurses. All she needed was people who could get her up, feed her, you know, and we had a series of people who came, you know, we were able to do it like that without, because she didn't, the idea of going into a home or hospital was really anathema to her. She wouldn't do that. So she really lived till she was 87. And in the end, she got gangrene in her thing, and the doctor said, we must chop off her leg. Luckily, my sister said, I'm going to get my brother. And I said, can't chop off her leg to start with. You know, it's only going to, it's silly. And so I got my friend, you know, Sergio Triay. You probably don't know Sergio Triay. He lives in San Pedro Alcantara, at any rate. He said, look, people never die of gangrene, they drive something else. What we have to do is see if we can get the circulation. So at that point, we took her into Spain to a clinic in San Pedro Alcantara, which was a lovely house that had been the house of one of the big families in Jerez, I think. And it was very nice because it was it had a lovely garden with grown trees and all the rest of it. And she absolutely loved that because she loved flowers and stuff. So we used to go there and wheel her around. But she was only there for 2 weeks before she died in her sleep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, at least so she had that bit,
she had
didn't
that bit
she?
There.
That
she
was fantastic.
Yeah,
so how long, I'm slightly confused about how long you were in Gibraltar, how long you lived there.
Mm. I of course went back
going back a bit.
Yes.
You know, picking up from the evacuation, you then came to school in the
came
UK.
To school, yeah, yeah.
And then you went back. So
then I went, and then I used to go by holidays. So I came here in April 43, and my first holiday back in Gibraltar was July 45, after the end of the war. And the extraordinary thing that happened to me was I arrived there, and I hadn't seen my mother since 43, or my sister, or my aunt, only my father had made one visit, which was no good at all because It would have been better if he hadn't have come. In fact, you know, it upset me more than anything else. And I went there, and they all started talking to me in Spanish, and I could understand it, but I couldn't answer back. I'd lost my Spanish for 2 weeks. It took me 2 weeks to get back to speaking Spanish again. I'd lost my Spanish, which was rather extraordinary. So then I was here at the public school and the university, so I went back to Gibraltar, actually, after I'd finished my bar finals in, I think it was 1956 or something. And then I practiced law. I didn't like law, really. I'd only done law because I didn't know what to do with my father. Very wisely said, because it's what it helped me to do. He said, become a lawyer, because even if you eventually you don't want to do it and all the rest of it, it'll help you to get other jobs. So that's exactly what happened. I did it for 4 or 5 years in the chambers of my cousin Guy Stagnetto. And when I got fed up, really, because it's not my personality. I'm much more sort of action person. I want to do things, you know. I then applied for the job of assistant town clerk. And because I was a lawyer, I got the job, because what I did have to do was, one, give advice on law to the council, and also appear in court on public health matters.
Right. And where was this, Reggie?
Gibraltar.
Oh, back in Gibraltar.
In Gibraltar,
then.
Yes,
oh,
in Gibraltar. Right. I didn't leave Gibraltar.
So were you really keen to get back to Gibraltar?
Oh, yes. Yes, so when I found that, you know, there were 17 lawyers at the time, you know, and I was a junior, you know, and there wasn't that much work, and I think my character or the sort of people got people to say, think, gosh, this guy's really a bit sort of soft. He's not going to be a really hard-hitting lawyer to win our case. I used to get a appear in court and get people coming to defend them in, you know, for things like that.
But this was in chambers in Gibraltar?
In Gibraltar, yes, with
so
Guy.
So what sort of cases were you dealing with?
Well, I mean, very, very minor stuff. Very minor stuff. And so I appear in court and things like that, but I didn't get any of the... Of course, perhaps it was a mistake to be with my cousin Guy, but I don't think so, because, you know, they were coming to him because he had a reputation for being very good, and he was, and he was very clever and all the rest of it. So I only got these sort of people who wanted to be represented in court, but I didn't get the sort of the people coming and saying, you know, write me a contract or buy me this property or do that thing. And then I thought to myself... I'll go to Canada. And then I realised that, you know, if I went to Canada and I tried to work as a lawyer there, I would have to go through the whole thing again. Then I decided that really, you know, I wanted to do something different. So I talked to my guy and I said, weren't they going to advertise for an assistant town clerk because John Mayling is getting on? He said, yes, it's sitting there and it's all ready to go. And, you know, he hasn't done it because John Mayling, you know, was a wonderful man. I really loved him. And... I said, but you better go and see the mayor. So I went to see the mayor and I said, aren't you advertising for a town clerk? And he said, yes, we should. Do you want to sign? I said, yes, I'm interested in applying. So they advertised and I applied. And there was only one other guy there who was Joshua Gabay, who was a friend of mine, actually. And rather unfortunately, I don't think in the end, actually, it was exactly the right thing happened. Because I think many years before he had asked the mayor, Sir Joshua, you know, I would say, you know, it'd be nice to be the town clerk and all the rest of it. I think he'd said that. And he'd said, well, why don't you take a course in public administration or something? And he'd done a course to sort of help him along with that. But he wasn't a lawyer. So he was actually much better suited as a schoolmaster. He became a schoolmaster in Clifton, the Jewish, isn't that the Jewish school? Or was it Clifford?
You know,
in England. Yes, a famous Jewish public school.
Clifton College.
Yes, I think it's Clifton, isn't
that's
it?
That's in Bristol, isn't it?
In Bristol. Right? Yeah. Well, I don't know
if it is. I don't know anyway.
At any rate, he was a very good master there, and all the rest of it. And then he came back to Gibraltar and married, and he made a lot of money giving private lessons. You know.
So what year are we talking about now?
We're talking about. Let me see. I applied for that in about. I left to come to England, let me see, in 1970, 71. I'm talking about the beginning of the 60s.
Right.
60, 61, something like that.
So how long were you assistant class?
So then what happened was that I was only assistant for 10 months, actually, because Mayling kept on having hemorrhages. And John Mayling, who was a guy, but he taught me a lot in those 10 months, really. He taught me a lot, and he then retired, and I then was acting, and then after a few months I was confirmed. And I loved that job.
So you became town clerk proper.
Well, I became the town clerk, and then I realised that what I had a facility for was being an administrator.
Yes.
Because what I had to do, we had something like 15, 16 other heads of departments and all these departments, and they all did different things. And really my main job, apart from the little bit about advising on things and appearing mostly, was to make sure that the machine was running properly, that everyone was doing their job, that everyone was serving the public properly, you know, and all the rest of it. So I had an administration where a head of department, all he had to do was walk in through the door if he wanted to see me, and I saw anyone at every time. I made certain that all our clerks and everyone were really working for the good of the public. I really enjoyed that. And then they decided and they got someone to report, that they were going to amalgamate the city council with the government. We ran a lot of things. We ran all the public utilities. We ran the markets. We ran the highways. We ran all the utilities, you know, telephones, water, gas, electricity. We ran the public health. So the government did sort of housing and the hospitals and the health service like that. But we did practically everything else, you know, and valuation.
But this was the 60s and 70s was a period where Gibraltar changed from being a colony.
Yes.
Headed legislative
council.
To very much becoming a self-governing.
That's right.
Overseas British.
That's
territory.
Right. That's right.
So you must have been there and at that transition, and the transition from, say, town clerk to being incorporated in the Gibraltar government.
Yes, but what happened was that when they finally did this, and they did it in a very, not a way that I liked, I'm afraid. Mm. It was because we always had the feeling in the council that the government were rather jealous of us because we had a much better reputation for doing things properly than they had, you know. So it was more a takeover than a proper thing. Though I may say that I'm very glad to say that, you know, I then looked 3 or 4 years on, and all the guys that we had trained became heads of department in their thing, because we had the best guys.
Mm.
You know, we had the best guys. But at any rate, they then said to me, what do you want to do? I said, what are you offering me? And they said, well, we want a new planning and development department, you know. So I said to them, I will take that on for 1 year and see what it's like. And if I don't like it, I want to be able to resign with the same rights as I would have if I resigned now. So they agreed to that. And I set up this department, and I actually, you know, put it on its feet. I had Mario Byrne, who was a fantastic guy, as my number two, and he was terrific. And we got this thing up, and I did one report of what we managed to do. But I found that the whole atmosphere was completely different to the council, you know.
Mm.
I just didn't like it. I mean, if I wanted to talk to my superior, you know, I had to give him a month's notice.
Is this when you thought about coming over to England?
So then what happened then was that I thought to myself, I don't want to do this, I want to leave. So I approached him and I said, you want to stay, because you're going to be made, if you stay here, you'll be made Attorney General. I said, I don't like the law. Then you're going to be made Financial Secretary. I said, I know nothing about finances. Then you're going to be Deputy Governor. I said, look, I don't like any of those things, and I'm no damn good at them. And I'm not going to stay here to do something that I don't like, and that I'm no good at. I'm leaving. So I left and I joined Oxfam. Because I'd been doing work for Oxfam for many years.
Yeah, so you found what you wanted to do.
And I'd been raising money for them. Mm. And I'd really become interested in the developing world and in all the problems of the developing world.